Welcome to Talking About Organizations, a podcast on organization and management studies graciously supported by our listeners. This is a sidecast for episode 114 on using Tristan Babfort's study and the socio-technical systems framework in professional education. This is Tom coming to you from Carlisle, Pennsylvania in the United States. Now, as many of our listeners will know, I work in a professional military education institution. I am a faculty instructor in a program that over the course of 10 months must prepare middle-level managers with approximately 20 years of military or government service for entry to the senior levels, the rough equivalent of junior executives. As one of the professions that promote largely from within, military leaders see a number of major transitions as they move from positions of direct leadership early in their careers to positions of so-called strategic leadership, responsible for leading and managing a very large and complex public sector professional organization. Now, one of the driving models for understanding the character and scope of each transition is stratified systems theory, which we covered in episode 48. As applied to military organizations, the theory posits that there are up to 7 strata in hierarchical organizations, each corresponding to progressively wider scopes and timeframes of decision-making from immediate to the span of years. Larger numbers of personnel supervised, from dozens to millions. Greater spheres of influence, from one's immediate proximity to global. And duties equivalent to those of a shop foreman all the way up to a CEO. The transitions are characterized as requiring development of new skills and new ways of thinking, sort of following the old saying that what got you here won't get you there. Now, 10 months may sound like a lot of time, but it isn't. So the challenge has been how to find ways to efficiently and effectively expose the students to a new idea that spurs reflection on how the levels of leadership they are about to enter are different from where they are now. And so, enter socio-technical systems and the Trist and Bamforth study. Now, I don't actually use Tristan Bamforth as a required reading. Rather, I introduced socio-technical systems via a framework published by Ziegenfuss in 2002. This framework presents 4 elements arranged in a square, clockwise from top right, being processes and technologies, then structures, psychosocial climate, and culture. Double arrows connect each box with each other, and the center of the square is leadership that is likewise connected to everything else. So by itself, this framework presents in a fairly simple form how complexity works. You do something or something happens in the environment in one box, and one can anticipate or at least explain the ripple effects felt in the other boxes. But I found that while this illustration of complexity is useful, to really make it hit home, I like to tell a story. And so that's where I use Tristan Bamforth. Again, I don't have students read the article. Rather, I describe the situation for them as sort of like a problem framing. It does not matter so much that my description is technically accurate or inaccurate, so much as it presents the right picture. Now, in advance, I usually ask if any of my students have coal mining experience or knowledge of it, and I have had a few, so if my description does kind of veer a little off, I defer to them for some of the finer details, but ultimately, it has not been a problem. So, I start, as Tristan Bamforth did, with a description of the Hancock method in the following fashion. I tell them to consider the classroom they are in now and pretend that it represents a space where teams of miners are working, the hewer, his mate, and a trammer, digging coal and hauling it out of the room and onto the conveyors. I then describe the effects of working as teams with the full visibility of the total task, and how the teams not only bonded together, but also socialized after work, cared for each other when they or their families felt ill, and so on as described in the article. And having done that, I then introduced the longwall method. Now, to illustrate this, I describe the method using the hallways of the building I'm in. We're working on one of the longer walls of the building is the coal face, and then other corridors represent where the flow of people went. And I describe how the flows were set up to ensure that air kept moving so that you didn't have carbon dioxide buildup and other hazards. I then described the job specifications that the Hewer, the Maiden, the Trammers, a small team, were replaced by seven whole different classes of workers divided into three shifts. And I go ahead and describe how the different shifts worked, such that nobody had visibility of the whole task. Each shift had different responsibilities. I explain in very brief detail how the different pay systems worked, just enough to show how different everybody was. And then after providing this description, I then ask the students, what do they think happened? Typically, they figure it out on their own and figure it out pretty quickly. They usually point that there would be major social breakdowns, including rivalries or conflict and tensions between shifts, where one shift will blame their problems on the workers in the earlier shift. The pay disparities would be a source of tension. They anticipated that the breakdown of the social bonds, because there was no reason for on-the-job interaction, the social bonds would break down and eventually follow into the off-duty environment where workers would no longer socialize together, families would no longer care for each other. Over time, stress, illness, turnover, they all anticipated that those would become problems. And usually, they will start bringing up their analogous experiences that they have had in their own careers that were very similar in character. Seeing an attempt at making something more efficient or more effective in an organization in a way that failed to consider potential impacts on both the personal and professional lives and the situations of the members of the organization. So then the use of the socio-technical systems framework becomes pretty straightforward from there. I guide them towards thinking about how the change in Tristan Bamford's case, the change in process and technology, introduced a new method of working, would then have ripple effects in structure, in climate, and in culture. I then have the students talk about other initiatives that they have experienced that both succeeded or failed on the basis of the presence or absence of understanding or anticipating the second order effects that the initiative would have on the organization. So then they learn how to use this socio-technical systems framework to sort of predict what happens if they try to institute a change without due consideration for all the possible outcomes. Now, I suppose someone could take this same approach and use other similar case studies of organizations. The reason why I like this particular one is because the coal getting story has the advantage of being very much grounded in a harsh reality, which is useful for my students because they themselves were at one time direct supervisors earlier in their careers. So a grounded and very tangible example makes it easier for the students to follow and to empathize with the members of the organization, in this case, the miners. And then Tristan Bamforth can become a useful cautionary tale about never losing sight over the unintended consequences of decisions made by higher levels. As a final point, I tell my students that the discussion about coal getting also demonstrates the power of storytelling for helping people make sense of complex phenomena and in future explain them to others. I do hope that this was helpful, even if this particular story doesn't quite fit with your professional education experience. I hope that the approach or the idea helps spur some further thought that you may find useful. And that concludes the episode for today. Thank you for listening. The views expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect those of their respective organizations or institutions. We hope that you enjoyed the conversation and found it valuable. If so, please consider subscribing through your favorite podcast service and you won't miss an episode. We also welcome your feedback, so if you liked or didn't like something, or have a correction or suggestion for us, please get in touch with us via LinkedIn, Facebook, X, or our website, www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. Also, please consider contributing to the program by buying us a coffee at www.buyusacoffee.com/TAOP. That's www.buyusacoffee.com/TAOP. Your support is greatly appreciated as it allows us to continue providing great conversations about the classics of organization studies. Again, thank you for listening, and we hope to see you when we present another classic reading on organization theory or management science here on Talking About Organizations.